Remember Donald Trump's first impeachment?
The Senate will convene as a court of impeachment.
If you don't remember, because it feels like ages ago, the impeachment centered around this call that Trump made to the president of Ukraine.
In that call, the president asked for an investigation of Democratic presidential hopeful Joe Biden and his son Hunter, who used to be a director of a Ukrainian oil company.
Now, Trump was acquitted.
Donald John Trump, President of the United States, is not guilty as charged in the second article of impeachment.
But the drama involving Ukraine, it stuck around.
Joe Biden's son Hunter is emerging as an issue in the presidential campaign. We're learning new information tonight about a Senate Republican investigation into the younger Biden.
It was an attack line of Trump's and the GOP that Biden improperly threatened Ukraine to aid his son's business interests when he was vice president.
Can I be honest? It's a very important
question.
He stood up.
The answer to the question is no.
Ukraine.
Those claims were widely discredited. But now that Biden's president, all of this has made diplomacy with Ukraine a little bit weird. In fact, Biden hasn't talked with Ukraine's president on the phone yet.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today,
I think that he's waiting to call the president of Ukraine, you know, until the dust settles from the last kind of 2 years of this toxic back and forth.
Natasha Bertrand on how Ukraine's position at the center of years of political fights in the U.S. has made it one of the trickiest foreign policy situations of Biden's early presidency. Natasha, in your story, you quote a foreign policy expert saying Biden and the U.S.'s relationship with Ukraine has, quote, a real atmosphere of awkwardness. I find that kind of fascinating. Have you ever heard someone describe our relationship with a country that way?
Not exactly. But the relationship that Biden has with Ukraine is complicated by all of the politicization that's gone on in the last 2 years, 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. And it's just been this headache, frankly, for Ukraine, because Ukraine has always wanted to maintain bipartisan support generally among U.S. officials, because it is on the front lines of this major battle with Russia.
It's footage European leaders wouldn't want to see. Exclusive video of intense fighting in Ukraine's eastern Luhansk region over the weekend. This battle would last for over 4 hours.
Both, you know, physically, like an actual war that's still going on in eastern Ukraine, but also, you know, disinformation war, a cyber war.
Nearly a quarter of a million people lost power in this small Ukrainian city when it was targeted by a suspected Russian attack last December.
All of these things that Ukraine has been dealing with for years and years. So they need this bipartisan support from the U.S., and seeing their country politicized over the last couple years has been very damaging to them.
So to understand this politicization, I want you to take me back to Biden's work in Ukraine during Obama's presidency, because watching the discussion of it from both the left and the right over the past few years has left me kind of confused. Republicans during the election claiming corruption, Democrats, you know, totally shooting it down, saying this is a complete conspiracy theory. What exactly is there?
So there's no evidence that Biden was ever acting corruptly in his dealings with Ukraine. The issue at the heart of Republicans' argument is that when he was vice president, he had the Ukraine portfolio for President Obama. He was tasked essentially with working with Ukraine to make anti-corruption reforms, to make them a better and more stable U.S. partner in the region, impeding Russia's influence in the region. And while he was doing that, one of his biggest demands was that the prosecutor, the top prosecutor in Ukraine, Viktor Shokin, be fired because he was seen as corrupt himself, and he was seen as actually impeding a lot of the major reforms that not only the United States wanted to see, but that the international community was really pushing for. Again, in order to draw Ukraine further out of Russia's orbit and into the European sphere. When he was trying to get Ukraine to fire Viktor Shokin, he said, "We're not going to give you this $1 billion in U.S. aid unless you get rid of the guy.
We're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, "You have no authority. You're not the president." The president said, I said, "Call him."
What Republicans said was that, well, that sounds very similar to what President Trump said, which is that we're not going to give you security assistance, aid, unless you do these investigations of Joe Biden's corruption.
Huh.
Oh, and I should add that the prosecutor that Joe Biden wanted to be fired at one point was investigating a gas company that his son sat on the board of.
Mm. So that's where, like, the Republican claim of corruption, family corruption, comes from.
Exactly. So Republicans said, well, it was all in his self-interest. It wasn't really for anti-corruption purposes. Mm. But, you know, that falls apart because the prosecutor hadn't been investigating Hunter himself and had not been investigating that company for years. The difference, obviously, is that President Trump was asking Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, to investigate his political opponent for his mm-hmm. own political reasons in order to try to win the 2020 election. He wasn't saying you should investigate Joe Biden because this is in your interest to fight corruption in your country. He was saying you should investigate him because it will then convince me that I should release this aid to you. And it was obviously all for domestic political considerations.
Mm. So all of this, even though there's no evidence of anything improper on Biden's end, all of this, the Republican attacks against him, the fact that Ukraine was at the center of Trump's impeachment, it's created this awkward diplomatic situation. As you've reported, Biden hasn't talked with President Zelensky on the phone. And this is despite the fact that Ukraine is central to U.S. policy involving Putin and aggression from Russia, right? I mean, what's at stake here?
A lot. This is key. Drawing Ukraine further into Europe's orbit, supporting Ukraine, giving them security assistance is key to essentially stymieing Vladimir Putin's agenda. So if the United States wants to counter Russia in Europe, in the region more broadly, then they need to show their full support for Ukraine. So it's really existential for the Ukrainians. But for the United States, it's also really important, you know, just in terms of countering Russian aggression all over the world.
As Biden figures out his administration's policy towards Ukraine, do you think the politics and the optics of this are going to be a consideration? Like, if he does support Ukraine more heavily against Russia, if he does push anti-corruption work, is it inevitable that the GOP would seize on that? And is that a part of his calculation here?
You know, I think that support for Ukraine is still a fairly bipartisan thing. So I don't necessarily think that the more mainstream factions of the Republican Party will make a huge stink over it, especially if Biden is acting within the tradition of Republican support for countering Russia and Russian aggression in the region and support for Ukrainian territorial sovereignty and independence. But that's the mainstream Republicans, right? Mm-hmm. The bigger wild card is like the House Republicans who have seized upon this narrative promoted by Trump that Biden is corrupt and that everything he does with regard to international relations, especially with regard to Ukraine and China, et cetera, is for his own personal financial gain. So I think that it's definitely part of the calculation for the administration, you know, how to walk this fine line where Biden's not being too aggressive in the way that he was at that Atlantic Council panel saying, well, we're going to withhold money and, you know, unless you fire that guy, and like being very kind of cavalier about it all and kind of being very overt in U.S. pressure on Ukraine. He's been more quietly putting pressure on them throughout his first couple months in office. So the administration levied sanctions on a major Ukrainian oligarch who's seen as very close to Vladimir Putin. And that was seen as a major signal to Ukraine that they need to do more to counter this oligarch and to counter other oligarchs in the country. But he's not out there talking about it. You know, he's not calling Zelensky. He's not releasing readouts. It's a lot more subtle. And I think that it's impossible to deny that the recent political history has nothing to do with that.
Natasha Bertrand, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also today, President Biden is ordering states to make coronavirus vaccines available to all American adults by May 1st. Biden announced the move in an address last night, just hours after signing a $1.9 trillion stimulus plan that includes funding the White House plans to use to open a slew of new vaccination sites and surge medical personnel across the country to help meet that goal. That includes doubling the number of mass vaccine sites and pharmacies where people can get the shots. The health department is also expanding the pool of people qualified to administer vaccines to include a wide range of medical professionals, including paramedics, dentists, and medical and healthcare students. And the top Democrat and Republican on the House Armed Services Committee are calling for a drawdown of National Guard troops at the U.S. Capitol. In a joint statement issued on Thursday, Armed Services Chair Adam Smith and Ranking Member Mike Rogers said, quote, "More than 2 months after the January 6th attack, the seat of our nation's democracy remains heavily protected by guardsmen and surrounded by a perimeter of fence." Adding that, quote, "It's time for us to review what level of security is required so they can return home to their families and communities." The move comes just days after Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin approved a request from Capitol Police for nearly 2,300 guardsmen to remain through late May. The Politico Dispatch production team includes senior producer Jenny Ament and executive producer Irene Noguchi. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.